Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Dr. Hossein Khorus Meher. He is an author, physician, scientist, and spent over two decades in cancer research and drug development. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hossein.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Ajay. Thank you.
You are welcome to the show, Dr. Hossein. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people across the globe will benefit from what we'll be talking right now. We'll be talking about finding freedom from the monkey mind. So in that backdrop, we will talk. I want to understand from you, Dr. Hossein, what's the way you want to, you know, explain this monkey mind to people? People have heard it. Even I've heard it several times, but you know, the understanding of mind is still continues by everyone who understands mind in their own manner. I want to understand your mind on this monkey mind. What Absolutely. Exactly should we understand of it?
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show, and for folks in India to be listening. India, obviously the birthplace of Buddha, the one who 2,500 years ago tried to understand the mind and really his insights into the mind, into this monkey mind, were amazing. I mean, for 2,500 years ago, without any knowledge of science, to understand the workings of the mind. Well, 2,500 years later, science is now beginning to really understand how our brain works. And it's beginning to shed light on this monkey mind. And this monkey mind now has a name. It's called the default mode network. And it turns out, and this is all pretty new science, it turns out that our brain has at least seven networks. And what is a network? A network is just different parts of the brain that connect to do a function. So you have the visual network, it helps us see. You have the auditory network, it helps us hear. You have cerebellar sensory motor network, it helps us move and feel. And then you have three very important networks that govern our mental health, our ego, our sense of self. One of them is called default mode network. It is essentially the monkey mind. It is the wandering mind. We all need a healthy default mode network to be active, to be functional. But for many of us, this default mode network is overactive, and it gives rise to this condition called the monkey mind, where we're not present in the moment. We're in the past, we're in the future, we're thinking about ourselves, and that can lead to some serious conditions like anxiety, emotional pain, depression, addiction, and many others. So I think science is now entering the picture here in helping us understand our own brains, basically.
Right, Dr. Hossein. So you said that, you know, that default mode network, if I understand, is the default mode. And if it is the default mode, then why do people talk about focusing, about putting our brains to something much more? And I want to understand, why did the creator, who seems to be so intelligent, why did he put this, only this, as the default mode and no other mode that you just talked about, so many of them?
Excellent question. Okay, keep in mind that for many, many thousands of years, human beings, we were living in very, very difficult conditions, right? We were living alongside predators. We were living through famine. We were living through very difficult times. And the way that our brain got us to this point is through this default mode network, which what it is trying to do is to ensure our survival. It wants to think ahead to the future. It wants to plan our life so that we can succeed. However, we're in a very different time now. We're in a society. We're not facing predators. Life is very different than it was thousands of years ago. And so that same primitive mind of ours is now causing us to overthink. It has good intentions. It wants us to succeed. It wants us to survive. But in this current, you know, society of ours, this overthinking actually now is causing us more harm than good. So I think part of our evolution, our progress now, is to realize there is another network in the brain, one of the seven. It's called central executive network. And it is more of the observing mind, the mind that is present. It has a more expansive consciousness. And so what we really should do is tap into that central executive network, which is what Buddha described as the higher self. It's what all of the prophets have described. And it is a different network in the brain that we can tune into to be present, to be focused, and to be happier in life, basically.
Right, right. So before we come to this, you know, shifting of brain, which sounds to be a person like me to be a very tough task, I want to understand, when did we start playing, havoc with our mind? Was it when we went towards specialization in the name of industrialization? Then there was specialization and expertise. Help us understand, because
that's a very good question.
We were made to believe that, you know, this is such a great thing for humanity and for humans also. Help us understand.
Yeah, that is an excellent question. So what we had in the pre-industrial time, we had a belief system. Doesn't matter if you were of the Hindu faith, Christian faith, whatever religion you want to refer to, it was a belief system. It was a belief in a higher power. It was a belief in that things would be okay, that there was something more important than us and ourselves. And so family and this confidence, this belief in a higher self, a higher power, that belief system helped us get through life and maintain our ties with family. But what happened since, I think it's really the Enlightenment period of Europe, when, you know, René Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am," there was a push away from religion towards science. And that movement, I mean, it brought us all of our wonderful technologies, right? I mean, everything we have today technologically, we can trace back to, you know, 16th, 17th century Europe, and then after the Industrial Revolution. But there was a shift away from religion, away from spirituality, towards science and reason. The problem now is we've kind of lost that belief system. And our belief system now focuses around me, I, my cravings, my desire, my, you know, and that can set up for some unhappiness. But there's some good news. The good news is that science is now beginning to understand the importance of having a belief system, of having spirituality. Again, doesn't matter what religion you're talking about. It could be Christian, Buddhist, Hindu. At the core of all these religions, there is compassion. There is forgiveness. There is integrity. There is belief in a higher power, higher than ourselves. Science is beginning to show the true medical value of that. So I think this is an exciting time where we can combine the old and the new and find ways of improving our mental health and our overall happiness.
Right, right. So we still have science. We still have the outcomes of science, good ones. Then why is mental health problem rising by the day? And if it is so good, why are we not able to tackle it? We are moving towards things called psychedelics and so many things I don't really understand. So I want to understand, where is science and where is this monkey mind? Where will they meet together so that they can have some peace together?
This is why I wrote the book. Okay, I've been working 25 years in the field of oncology. I am seeing new medicines for cancer. We are seeing medical advancements. We're seeing advancements in artificial intelligence. All of that should make us very happy, right? No, we are more miserable than ever. Rates of addiction are high. Rates of stress and anxiety are high. Our mental health is poor. And this shows a gap in science and medicine. But I think the good news here is science is beginning to understand why we are so unhappy. And it goes back to this default mode network. So the whole purpose of this book, it's a book of self-discovery. It's a book about personal growth. It's a book about helping you understand your brain's monkey mind, the default mode network, why it does the things that it does, and how to heal it, how to silence it, and how to heal it. So what are some of the ways that you can silence this monkey mind, which can cause, again, stress, anxiety, depression, emotional pain, trauma, addiction. So the ways that you can silence the default mode network naturally is through mindfulness exercise popularized by Buddha. This is what Buddha discovered 2,500 years ago. It turns out meditation, mindfulness silences the default mode network. This has been shown in MRI studies. Clinical studies are now showing this. Prayer does the same thing. You mentioned psychedelics. So for thousands of years here in the Americas, Native Americans have used plant medicine, psychedelics, a form of a cactus in the form of mushrooms for healing purposes. It turns out these medicines silence the default mode network. However, it's not very healthy in the way that meditation does. But I think it's a clue to how we can develop newer medicines that can do this without all of the crazy side effects. So I would not recommend going out experimenting with psychedelics. I would not recommend it. But if you have somebody with refractory depression, severe depression, who has a high rate of suicide, these plant medicines have been shown to have value. Okay, but again, if you are a healthy person, I wouldn't go around experimenting with these plant medicines. I just wouldn't do it. Let medicine show us how to use these properly in the right setting with the right doctor. One day we will have a strong medical value for them. There are colleagues of mine who are using these. I would urge caution. There's still a lot we don't understand. I would encourage mindfulness. I would encourage prayer. I would encourage some of the key, you know, values at the heart of religion: forgiveness, compassion, gratitude, integrity, right? I mean, basically, this is the Eightfold Noble Path that Buddha outlined. Those same principles are at the heart of every religion. Studies are now showing that these qualities can improve stress, they can improve health. And I think the old and the new are now combining.
Right. Dr. Hussain, I'm impressed. You talk a lot about Buddha, a doctor talking a lot about Buddha, which is such a great thing to hear. But one more thing I want to understand, you have spent so much of time in cancer research and drug development, and you are now talking about the monkey mind. When did this shift happen with you? And then you delve, you know, so about so many other things. So I just want to understand your mind here.
Sure. So in this book, I talk about 11, I call them knots, like knots in a rope. Rather than calling them a mental illness, these are knots in a rope. We all have them. There's 11 of them. I had all 11 of them. So some of these include stress, emotional pain, addictive craving, which is my term for addiction, loneliness and negativity. And through a 6-month process, I was able to resolve all of these issues. And I put some of the findings here in this book. I've been interested in the mind for a very long time. I'd say also about 20 years ago, I took some classes at Caltech where I graduated on the mind. I was just very fascinated. And my two other books are also about the mind. So I love this topic. And I think mental health and cancer go hand in hand. I know a lot of patients with cancer who struggle with mental health. So I think, you know, we have to address mental health as we are addressing heart disease, as we are addressing cancer. Mental health is very, very important, very important. A big driver of our diseases, right, is our mental health and mental well-being. So very important topic. I hope other doctors will also talk about.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Dr. Hussain. So now coming back to the DMN thing, default mode network, you talked about silencing it. If we, for any system, the way we were designed, if we silence this network, what will be the impact on us as human beings? What do you mean by silencing it?
Yeah.
Or should we be talking about taming it or retuning it? I want to understand.
Yes. So you don't silence it like shushing a loud baby. Not like that. You don't get angry at it. You don't try to destroy it. What you actually do is you turn on the central executive. How? By turning on your observing mind. When you're fully present and you're observing your thoughts. When you observe your thoughts, you actually shut off this monkey mind. And so it's this quality of presence, of observing. And we're all very different. I think that part of our brain can be turned on in different ways. For some people, it's listening to music. Some of us, we listen to music. We are fully present. The monkey mind shuts off. For me, I like to do, 20, 30 minutes of mindfulness meditation where I just observe my mind. Buddha talked about vipassana, which is insight meditation, which I love, where you observe your mind and you look for three things. You look for craving, aversion, and ignorance, thoughts rooted in ignorance. You identify these thoughts, you watch them disappear. And in that state of presence, in that state of observing, the monkey mind is off. So, and I wouldn't get angry when the monkey mind shows up. Don't get angry at it. Take it as a sign that you should turn on your observing mind more. Practice it. This takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. But with 6 or 7, 8 weeks of constant practice, you will find that the monkey mind is quieter. The observing mind is more present. And the stronger this observing mind gets, the more able you are able to watch this monkey mind when it comes and watch it go away. It's pretty amazing. And you'll see as you do that, your levels of stress go down. Your levels of anxiety go down. Emotional pain go down. And this book will help you through that process.
Right. So tell us a bit more about the book. What more have you dealt in the book? Also, this monkey mind, silencing the monkey mind or, taming the monkey mind, is it for everyone? Or is it only for, because there will be still people who are, always in dangerous situations in one way or the other. How do we then understand whether we are in danger, whether we have to go into fight or flight mode? Yes. Because mental health, again, can be, it can... We will be able to perceive things very differently. Even in a friendly atmosphere, we might have threat. If we silence this mind, how will we come to know about this? Some nowadays, danger is not from enemy out of the defenses, away from the, but people from people yes. around us.
Excellent question. So first question, who can silence the default mode? Anyone who has the intention to be happy and healthy. There are a lot of people who do not actually want that. They are happy with their monkey mind. They have a strong relationship with their thoughts, with their emotional pain, with their loneliness. They actually don't really want to get rid of that. Okay. And that's fine. You are free to live however you want. For people who want to be happy and healthy and have an intention of quieting this monkey mind, of finding a happier place, they can absolutely do it. It's not going to happen overnight, but it starts with setting the intention. So when you set the intention, I want to be happy, starting now, I want to start this process, you have already started on the journey. I mean, this is what Rumi has said, Jesus has said, Buddha, they all say, set the intention and start walking in the direction the road appears. Now, what happens to the fight or flight when you're in the observing mind, when you've quieted the monkey mind? The fight or flight is still there. It shows up when you need it. So you're not in a state of anxiety where you're worried about the future. But when a threat comes up, your fight or flight turns on, you deal with that threat and it's done. For example, if you're driving on the street, driving down the street and you see a big hole in the road ahead, Your fight or flight takes hold, your heart races, you take the road, you steer away from this hole, and then your fight or flight has saved your life, and now you calm back down. But if you're in the monkey mind state, as you keep driving, thoughts arrive, and you think about this argument you had with your spouse, you think about this deadline next week, and the fight or flight starts even though you're not in harm's way. This is the monkey mind. The monkey mind is giving you fight or flight unnecessarily. And that actually damages your health. It has a lot of bad side effects, including causing diabetes and weight gain, heart disease, etc. So if you can silence this monkey mind, you will find better health. You will find better mental health and physical health. And you'll be more able to deal with life stressors when they show up.
Right, right, Dr. Hussain. You talked about loneliness. I want to understand, is there a relationship between the monkey mind and loneliness?
Yes.
Or are these two unrelated things?
Yes. Excellent question. Yes, there is a direct correlation. Our default mode network gives us a sense that we are different from others, right? The purpose of the default mode network is to ensure our survival. And so it creates this false perception that we are different from others, that we are better than others, and that we have to compete with others to be successful. And so we go down this lonely road thinking, I have to beat all of my competitors to be happy. And in actually, that default mode network takes us down this lonely path. Studies have shown that loneliness can cut life expectancy up to 13 years off of life expectancy. Our Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, Dr. Murthy, has written a book about this. There was a Harvard study showing that the best predictor of health into old age is having strong relationships. It's as good as cholesterol. So this default mode network, it's trying to ensure our success. Actually, it's making us lonely and hurting us in the long run. And when we come to understand this and actively cultivate compassion, empathy, caring for others, we can silence this default mode network, build relationships with others. That will actually improve our health. That's what the science is telling us. So it's pretty amazing stuff.
Right, right. So one thing I wanted to understand is that earlier with the monkey mind, people used to have still cohesion within societies and they used to still carry on. So in a way, it looked like that mind worked keeping together people together, either because of threat to life or because of fear or getting, killed in whatever situation. So that kept people together, and that did not lead to any loneliness. People talked about solitude, but that came later on, and that was a good thing. So I want to understand, is it because nowadays we are looking at much more protection from society's creation, that everything is good, or we are made to feel good within the confines of our four pillars of our house? We feel that we don't need the monkey mind. Are we in this situation? Are we trying to leave the monkey mind because it has some defects, but actually leaving out something bigger and leading to loneliness?
Excellent question. This is a very important question. The purpose is not to silence the monkey mind. The purpose is to heal our default mode network so that it's working for us, not against us. We cannot get rid of the default mode network. It's a very important part of our mind. It helps us make decisions. It helps us react. We need it. I think some of the old gurus talked about living in solitude and finding freedom from this monkey mind. Actually, we need a healthy default mode network to be happy, to be successful. But for many of us, this wandering mind becomes overactive and turns into this monkey mind. It doesn't help that we have all of the social media and all of the distractions and all of the stressors in life that's making our minds overactive. So the whole point is to understand this default mode network, to heal it, and to have it work for us. So, I have stress all the time. I have a very difficult job, 3 young kids. My default mode network is on, but I recognize it, and I recognize how it helps me, and I have deep gratitude for it. I recognize that, my wandering mind is going off thinking about this meeting I have in a couple of days, getting me ready for it, and I have such gratitude for it. I say, thank you, default mode network, for making my life easier. 3 years ago, this monkey mind of mine was overactive, causing me to always have a craving, always have negative judgment, reactive, emotional pain, giving me depressive thoughts. But I've been able to form a new relationship with this wandering mind of mine. And I no longer have a monkey mind. I have a working, functional default mode network. And it's amazing. I hope more people can do this, it's a really much happier place to be.
Right, Dr. Hussain. Now, one more thing. Let's bring spirituality into the discussion. What is its relationship with the monkey mind? If you look at our evolution, in the so many years of, you know, growth, development of humankind, we had great spiritual thinkers. From east to west, everywhere people talk about, you know, all the great things. With today's time, we don't have any of these spiritual thinkers. We have got thinkers of the mind, with the mind. And they are, you know, the social media, you know, all the companies, you already know, this has already been discussed in the in Western nations, so many things, and people have to even apologize publicly for that. So how do we see the relationship between the spirituality, when we need spirituality too much, especially in today's time, that if we change the default network, would we be evolving to a better level, or would we be, you know, living out in the past where it gave us a lot of directions in terms of spirituality?
That's a very important topic. You know, this is the reason why there is so much unhappiness, is because of this lack of spirituality. If you look at TikTok and social media, the belief system, again, is around me, I am the center of the universe, my craving, my aversion, and that's why there's unhappiness. With spirituality, there's a realization of something much bigger than me and I. And it is a much happier place when you're in that spiritual state, in that central executive, when it's, you've transcended the obsession about me and my and mine. I hope humanity, you know, in this time of great suffering, can realize that spirituality gave us quite a lot of value. And science is beginning to show this. There was a study looking at 9,000 papers that looked at the effects of spirituality, and it concluded that spirituality is a big driver of mental and physical health. Even physical health, people who are spiritual recover faster when they're in the hospital. And so even the science is telling us that having spirituality is very critical for our well-being. So I hope we can see more truly spiritual people out there guiding us in the direction we need to go, because this current climate of me and I and my likes and my is led us to this unhappiness. So I think we do need a new tide, hopefully, and maybe folks like you can help us get there.
Absolutely. Now let's look at one last thing: is artificial intelligence and science, and then our mind are a separate entity. Now, is artificial intelligence is also science in a way, in a technology? But are artificial intelligence or science on the same side, or are on different sides? Because science is saying something else, AI seems to be saying something else. In fact, several people, a lot of stress, a lot of questions, a lot of other questions, that this will lead us to further problems rather than taking care of the problem. Maybe in some aspect it will take care of the problem, but I want to understand your mind on how do you see this.
So the first book that I published is called Project Bodhi. I wrote it about 7 or 8 years ago now. Bodhi referring to the Bodhi tree. The Project Bodhi was written in 2015 about life in 2029, when AI would not take over, but we were at a point where people had to make this decision. How are we going to use AI in our life? And it's ultimately, it's still our decision. It's within our domain. At this point, AI is not going to go running off on its own, like Terminator, you know, creating its a new species or anything. But it is ultimately our decision how we want to use AI. Do we want to use AI to improve our happiness, to improve our efficiency, to help us get to a better, you know, climate, let's say, help us with clean energy? It's ultimately our decision and the decision of, well, the executives who are developing this. So I think it's important that we approach this with integrity, with compassion, trying to help people, not use it to take advantage of people. And I mean, so far, I'm sure you've used ChatGPT. I mean, it's like a glorified Google, right? It's nothing too special at this point. But what happens when it can communicate with people? Maybe I'm an optimist, but when I wrote Project Bodhi, I foresaw in 2029 that AI would help us discover, because we would no longer use our smartphone. We would be using smart glasses. And the glasses in the book I called Google Vision, which I can't, you know, Apple just came out with the Vision glasses, which are not that good. But I think we're going to see new technologies, new tools, smart glasses, for example, that allow us to discover the world with the help of AI. I think that there is a lot of positive potential, but there's a lot of danger as well. So we have to be critical, ask the right questions. When we see something dangerous, we need to speak up and bring these executives, like you said, to Congress, make sure we're heading in the right direction. So I'm remaining optimistic, but let's keep a close eye on it.
Absolutely, you are an optimistic. But I can see you have written another book, also Extinction 6. So what do you think the next extinction level event, it will be related to, you know, something like AI or something much more bigger than this? It will simply take off our minds and leave us with emptiness. How do you see that sort of extinction and not the extinction that actually happened?
Yeah. So, yeah, Project Bodhi was my optimistic book. Extinction 6 is pessimistic, although the book is optimistic by the end of it. So we are in, it looks like, the sixth extinction of planet Earth. I mean, if you look at the number of species that are lost, if you look at the rate of climate change, unfortunately, this could be the Earth's sixth extinction man-made. And even though we know this is all driven by fossil fuels, we're still driving our petrol cars and just ignoring the future. And that sets us up for some pain ahead. So Extinction 6 was about life in the year 2066, where climate change has accelerated because of accelerated oil drilling. And it's not a happy place. But the book is about some, you know, a few of the main characters who get back to the core root of innovation and help deliver some, you know, clean energy. And I think the ultimate clean energy is going to be fusion power, nuclear fusion power. Hopefully we can solve that. That will solve all of humanity's energy needs. We'll no longer need fossil fuels. But I think there's still room for solar power. Folks watching this, if you're young, you want to get into a hot field, help us develop cheap solar power. Cheap solar power that'll put the oil companies out of business. This is what we need today, right now. We need the brightest minds to develop the new technology to prevent this climate change from getting any worse. I think we can do it, but right now, so far, the industrialized countries, we're not doing enough. It's a big problem, unfortunately, but just have to keep pushing.
Just have to keep pushing. There is lots to understand from you, Dr. Hussain, lots to know from you, lots to understand from your books, and I'm sure a lot of people would like to connect with you, understand more about everything that you do. So what is the best way for them to do so?
Absolutely. My website is yourdefaultmode.com. And I'll put this podcast there and links to the book. If you'd like to just read the book for free, you can see it. At the very bottom of the website are all of my social media links. So I'm on, you know, Instagram, etc. But happy to connect. Yeah. And maybe one day I can visit India and meet with you. I would love to visit someday. I've never been to India, actually, but would love to visit someday.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.